piece in the New Internationalist headlined how Palestine became Israel's spyware testbed. That does it for our show. Belated happy birthday to Ishmael Darro. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Cannabis is now legal in New York for those 21 and over, but we need to be mindful of where we use it. Secondhand smoke can impact those around you. For more information, visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as to the entire world over the internet at WUSB.FM. The time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. That means it's time for Off the Wall. Really. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm over here.
Yeah, it's dark outside now.
It gets darker now.
It gets darker. Well, it gets dark earlier. I think it's about the same amount of dark, but it's just earlier. So, yeah. Okay, but we can deal. We can adapt. All kinds of things to talk about tonight. Oh, boy. We have a busy show, so let's dive right into it. You know, Kyle, I don't know if you know about this. You know, there was almost a fist fight on the floor of the Senate today.
I heard someone got elbowed. Is this a
No. That's a
GOP
different
on GOP
no,
violence.
No, no, no. That's a different altercation.
Oh,
that was in the House. No, there was another one in the Senate.
Wow.
I can't make this up.
This is actually really common around the world. I mean, a lot of governments get into. I mean, we've seen like chairs and things being thrown.
Watch the Korean House of whatever they are. Or Eastern Europe, they do it all the time. But no, this involved a Republican. Well, it involved Republicans all around. Are you surprised? Is anyone surprised by that? I'm not surprised by that. This is GOP Senator Mark Wayne. What a weird name. And I'll probably be on his list for saying that. But Mark Wayne, it's like two first names merged into one. Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma. Never heard of him before. And he got into a bit of an altercation with the president of the Teamsters Union. We have audio. I want to share this audio with you, Kyle, because
so,
this is priceless.
It was a constituent, essentially.
Well, it was basically he had the head of the Teamsters as a witness, and this head of the Teamsters apparently had insulted him via Twitter in the past. So what we have now is a Republican senator reading a tweet and then literally challenging the head of the Teamsters to a fist fight on the floor of the Senate. I could not make this up. Listen.
Track the union dues. It's actually higher. Non-union employees are getting paid by roughly 1% to 2%, which is exactly what union dues are, is 1% to 2% of their salary. So I just wanted to set the record straight on that, and that's coming from statistics, all right? Now, let's talk about Mr. O'Brien himself, his behavior. As everybody knows in this hearing, the last time him and I kind of had a back and forth. Appreciate your demeanor today. It's quite different. But after you left here, you got pretty excited about the keyboard. In fact, you tweeted at me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And let me read what the last one said. It said, "Greedy CEO who pretends like he's self-made. Sir, I wish you was in the truck with me when I was building my plumbing company. Myself and my wife was running the office because I sure remember working pretty hard and long hours. Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been. Always will be. Quit the tough guy act in these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, any time, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here."
"Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?"
"I'd love to do it right now."
"Well, stand your butt up then."
"You stand your butt up."
"Oh, hold on. Oh, hold, stop it.
Is that your solution, every poll?"
"No, no, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Active.
Oh, okay. Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond, Mr. Senator?"
"Hold it. Hold it. If we can, no, I have the mic. Said. I'm sorry.
This is
Hold
what
it.
He said.
You'll have your time."
"Okay.
Can I respond?"
"Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing. And God knows the American people have enough of contempt for Congress. Let's not make
like
it worse."
"I don't like thugs and bullies.
I don't like you, because you just described yourself."
"Hold it. You have the mic. Yeah. You have time.
All
make
right.
your statement."
"Then let's do this, because I did challenge you, and I accepted your challenge. And you went quiet."
"No, I didn't go quiet. You challenged me to a cage match, acting like a 12-year-old schoolyard bully."
"Excuse me. Hold it. No, excuse me.
I will say exactly.
Senator Mullen, I have the mic. You have questions on any economic issues, anything that said, go for it. We're not here to talk about physical abuse.
You brought.
We're not talking about. Of course, I did.
And let me show you his hearing, because I want to expose this thug to who he is. And
you're not pointing at me. That's disrespectful.
All right.
I don't care about respecting you at all.
I don't respect you at all.
So, all right, hold it. No.
You're one of the 100
it.
Of the most
hold
elite
it,
people
please.
Acted.
Please. All right. This is a hearing to discuss economic issues. All right? If you have questions for Mr. O'Brien or anybody else on what he has said, go for it. But we're not here to talk about fights or anything else.
I'm quoting exactly what he said.
You can and say what you
okay,
want.
I'd love to hear the rest of this, but my God, it goes on. It goes on for a while. Thank God for Bernie Sanders, the adult in the room, but I mean, this is what it's turned into. These are the people that we keep electing, threatening fistfights on the floor of the Senate. I've never seen anything like this.
I think they deserve the contempt. I think Bernie hit it right on the head, and
he was going to hit him on the head with the gavel. He was angry.
Yeah, and I mean, they really the constituents, the people that go there to answer questions. They have so many things to be upset about the way this entire institution has been run. I mean, it's worthy of a complete just dismantling and rebuilding the way and to goad that contempt is really dangerous. Mm-hmm. And of course, in a venue that is not a cage fight, like you want to do that, there are places for that. But, I mean, even responding to someone who is attacking you on social media that you may have met with, as a politician, you'd think that would be something that, yeah, it's interpersonal and it's not relevant. It's not relevant to constituents and you can be above it. And I think there are plenty of politicians that would give you advice or share stories about how they handle it.
You can be above it.
Well, they can't.
I don't think this senator can be above it.
No.
I don't think he can look past an insult on Twitter. How pathetic is this? This happened today. You'll probably be seeing a lot of this in the future, a lot of excerpts of this, hopefully not a lot of incidents like this, but wow. yeah, okay, you know, that leads us into something else far more serious. And that's Trump showing his true colors over this past week. My God, he went full Hitler. I'm not, you know, I don't use that phrase lightly. Believe me. I want to read you something that, you know what? I don't know where this appeared because I don't think it was on Twitter. It was on one of his make-believe social media sites. But this is what he said. And he said it in front of crowds too. In honor of, on Veterans Day. Or Remembrance Day, whichever you call it. In honor of our great veterans on Veterans Day, we pledge to you that we will root out the communist, Marxist, fascist, and radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country, lie, steal, and cheat on elections, and will do anything possible, whether legally or illegally, to destroy America and the American dream. The threat from outside forces is far less sinister, dangerous, and grave than the threat from within. Despite the hatred and anger of the radical left lunatics who want to destroy our country, we will make America great again, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, there is so much to unpack here, and this is only one paragraph of the garbage he's been spewing lately. Referring to people as vermin, that is a something from the fascist how-to book from the 1930s and 40s. Look up Mussolini, look up Hitler. And that word was used quite a lot in reference to Jews, in reference to anyone who was opposed to their reign. He is basically showing his true colors now. He is basically showing you what he will do if he gets reelected. And it's scary. It's frightening. And, you know, what's more frightening than this to me is hearing that more people support him than support Biden. And we have this false narrative going that Biden is too old. If he's too old, he's really doing a good job at pissing off the opposition with his actions. And his actions have been many. He has flown all around the world at a moment's notice to respond to various crises. He has basically revolutionized the infrastructure in this country. What is happening with rail, for just one instance, is revolutionary, and roads and all kinds of things like that. But we're going to focus on how old he is when he's only a couple of years older than Trump in the first place? That is insane. I cannot for the life of me understand how people are letting this become a talking point when you have people like Trump basically promising to execute people who oppose him or to shoot on sight suspected shoplifters and all kinds of other horrors. And whether or not he ever gets to do that, he's basically installing that mentality into our nation. And it will not survive. It will not survive this kind of a thing. We saw the harm that came from one reign. A second, where he basically knows the tricks, knows how to get what he wants, and has a lot of enemies that he wants revenge on. That is something that we've never seen before. And we need to address that. We need to stop this. Take it seriously. Yeah, you might have differences with Biden. I certainly do. You know, he's not nearly progressive enough for my taste, but boy, am I glad he's there instead of this guy.
Yeah. The other initiatives, broadband, I wouldn't forget that either. There's so many things to go into just as far as achievements that I thought were never going to happen. There's plenty of other things, though, that I could raise personally that I feel like are being mishandled or sabotaged even.
Oh, God.
Don't get me started about the mail system.
That's where you're going to start, the mail system? No, he has messed that up, but good.
No.
His guy is still in charge of the Postal Service. How is that
possible?
His guy is still in charge. You know, he has a judge that's working for him that is overseeing his trial in Florida. And don't even debate me on that. She is working for him. She is giving him everything he asks for. It's pathetic. That should never have happened. A judge that he appoints should never be in charge of what happens with him.
Yeah, and these are the appointees. These are the people that I think are more frightening at this stage, but are more visible as they emerge in their helpful ways. So, yeah, that is actually more consequential than him. He seems pretty well busy, so to speak. And there's plenty of interested entities that are front of mind for him. And I think that there's a lot of things about how we came to this and systemic things, mm-hmm. Historical things that are so... so important to contextualize and to frame the whole thing, but unfortunately we can't really dissect it now. We have the acute issue that this party is allowing him to co-opt it amidst all of this criminality and expecting this country to go along with it peacefully.
Yeah, there's no excuse, you know, and I say this directly to people that are considering supporting him as a protest against something Biden is doing. Think carefully about your actions and what you are leading us into, because this is unforgivable to allow something like this to happen. No, we're talking about a mass deportation operation, a new Muslim ban, and internment camps. Well, he's basically, I don't know if he's just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, but so far everything seems to stick with his crowd. And that's scary. And that is exactly how dictatorships begin. And that's how they last, by people simply going along with whatever, you know, cockamamie scheme. I've never said that word before.
I think
that he comes up with.
Yeah, killing of drug dealers. I think that was straight out of Duterte in the Philippines, out of his playbook.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? It worked.
All of this kind of stuff he's handpicking from authoritarians that have been active around the globe, mm-hmm. and wants to run on this. It's not like 2016, where it's like, what is their platform? They just have this guy that's really loud and bombastic. This is like, our platform is fascism. Come join us. And they really want this bandwagon to be in control and shape the direction of this country. Again, I think there's a lot of interesting things that we could talk about that led up to this and that are guiding the kind of power that he's after, but we can't really get into that because it's an acute, immediate situation that this is what the Democrats are facing in every other branch of government and will be facing next year and all throughout this campaign season.
I'm just looking at all these things that he's pushing for, sending a National Guard into democratically run cities. to sweep up the homeless.
That's right. Soldiers on American citizens. You're going to deploy them.
It's disgusting. It's like science fiction. It's the kind of thing, you know, Mad Max type of thing that you say, wow, I guess that could happen in a hellish environment. Well, you know, you're on the verge of voting for it. It's nuts. It's insane.
Well, and I think that we've really covered a lot about technology and other fields and other realms, but that is an aspect of this that amidst the kind of surveillance stuff that's going on and industries really that are being propped up by violence and subsidized in many ways, I feel like there are strong connections with this kind of violent masculinity, this kind of leadership and its popularity in the world. And he wants to trademark or have his very own brand of it right here in this country. And all of the people that ever disagreed with him will be at the effect of it in his view and deserve it.
Now, you know, take that seriously, because you might think that only applies to people that he knows personally. No, it can apply to people well down the ladder, like, you know, you and me, easily. You know, people who have spoken out on Twitter or on the radio, certainly, or, you know, at demonstrations or whatever. Somebody like this, somebody with this mentality can be very vengeful. And we know that he is extremely angry and that people who cross him, I mean, they're basically, they leak information about people who testify against him, just like, you know, mobsters would. And then the crowd goes after those people. You know, just working for the Elections Commission is enough to get you death threats now. That is what we are looking at, where, you know, free and open elections are the threat. It's, you know, we shouldn't have to be saying this. It should be, you know, Biden 80% at least over somebody like this, but it's not. And I don't get it. I don't understand how whatever Biden is doing or not doing, this is not the way you want to go. I don't know how to communicate any clearer than that.
Well, and it's not, I think, the point, the necessary for our society and for our economy or government necessarily. But what it does is it raises the stakes. It makes people on edge. It puts fear out there. It gives vigilantes and people who would act on those words, as we saw with like January 6th, like, let's go march the Capitol. No, it's not okay. And the same attitude, I mean, it creates an environment of permissiveness around that kind of retaliation. And you end up having people in an excited state, people who are hypervigilant. Maybe they've been hypervigilant all their lives for all kinds of reasons, or they're new to it. But you're going to have just the same kind of language. The discourse goes away from actual civic responsibilities and legislation, stuff that, you know, just quietly makes a difference for everybody, and becomes about these settling scores and so forth, and arming yourself and protecting things and having intelligence on everything. And I don't know if that's a life and a world worth living in.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And the doors that it opens that can't readily be shut is something. The whole world is watching this too. In just horror, like I'm believing that this is actually our reality right now.
And this dividing again could be all kinds of influences, could be homegrown, but I feel very deeply that it is so detrimental to actual understanding that needs to be had. In fact, many groups, one party or the other, or all people generally, we've been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be some more understanding, some more communicating, and a less antagonism at a mere stereotype. Just looking at and making a judgment about somebody creates all these stereotypes and all these red flags that you have to be on guard for. That is not an environment where you can just share a joke or have a nice conversation next to somebody out in an establishment in a safe way. People need to let loose. They need to relax over the holidays and not be at each other's throats across the table. We need this as a country. We deserve it. Mm-hmm. And to have this injected and paid for and platformed, it's beyond disgusting. And like you said, completely unforgivable. Why are we being put through this? It's not important. We need to be together on so many other issues.
Please, Republicans, come to your senses. Democrats, grow up. I mean, yeah, Biden is as old as we knew he was going to be 4 years ago. So this is not the time to panic over that. All right. That's, you know, there is not enough time to start a new campaign with some other person that you're going to pull out of thin air. Start planning for 4 years from now. All right. And get familiar with how the system works here in this country. Okay, speaking of which, Election Day was last Tuesday. My fears were very well-founded, apparently, here in Suffolk County. But fortunately, we were the exception. And the red tide that swept over this place didn't sweep over the rest of the country. So, you know what? I'll take one for the team. And I'll say this, too. Romain, the guy who got elected the Republican county executive, Republican county executive, replacing Vallone, who was in office for 12 years, Democrat. He's not a bad guy. He's all right, you know. And I learned that through our own show when we had that Gyrodyne special a few years ago. He was one of the people who spoke out against destroying that pristine property. So, you know, fingers crossed that this guy won't be partisan and will listen to everybody and have an open door.
That's the Flowerfield Nature Preserve over there.
Yes.
By Smithtown.
Yeah. Okay. But next to Stony Brook. So, throughout the country, you know, in Ohio, we saw the abortion referendum pass easily. If Republicans had gotten their way, there would have been a 60% requirement. Unfortunately, they didn't get their way because it fell short of the 60%. Virginia, there were wins there. Throughout the country, wins for Democrats, losses for Republicans. And it's a reaction to the kind of nonsense that that we've been hearing over the past however many months. So hopefully, we start coming to our senses and start getting things done, because, boy, it's been difficult. Just today, just now, actually, the House voted to fund the government so it won't shut down. And it was Democrats that came to the rescue of Republicans again. I wonder if they're going to, you know, kick out Johnson because he worked with Democrats just like McCarthy did. I don't know. Another interesting part of the week was what is referred to in many parts of the world as Remembrance Day. We call it Veterans Day. It was the 11th of November. Now, it has a special significance in many countries because it was at 11 o'clock on the 11th of November in, what was it, 1917, where World War I ended, where hostilities ended. And what people do is wear a red poppy on over their heart for 2 weeks, ending on the 11th of November, or in the United Kingdom on Remembrance Sunday, which is the Sunday closest to the 11th. We saw the services from there, from London. The British always know how to do services, you know, ceremony really well. 2 minutes of silence throughout the country. It was very, very moving, as always. And we wore poppies for the first time ever. Kyle and I were able to track. It's not easy. We tracked down poppies and we wore them for 2 weeks. And only a couple of people asked us what in God's name they mean. I think it's such a moving tribute to just do that. You see newscasters in Canada and in the United Kingdom wearing them for 2 weeks. I think it's better than the way we do things. First of all, we don't even honor the fallen on the 11th of November. We do Memorial Day for some reason, and we honor living veterans on Veterans Day, which is fine, but why can't we work together with everybody else? So we were kind of out of step with everybody else who don't wear poppies, but it felt good. It felt good to finally do that.
Yeah, I'm not as critical of the way we do it versus the way other people do it. There's probably historical reasons, because the British Empire itself and its extent has a tradition of their own, and we've fought with them over the years for various reasons, primarily our founding. And we've come to have our own traditions around war making and so forth.
Did I say 1917? It's 1918. That's when hostilities ended. So that's an important part. And World War One was such a stupid war. It didn't have to happen. And because of World War One, that's how we got to World War Two.
Yeah, 1918, huh?
Yeah. And that leads us into something else. What are you shushing me for? This is the final installment of Films of the Year That Was, which is our regular feature that only just recently resumed because our transmitter just recently started working again, where Kyle and I go back in history and see every Academy Award-winning film, the best films of the United States and the best films of the rest of the world, because once again, we separate ourselves from the rest of the world, whatever. This time, the very last segment is the international film, the best international film of 2022. And since we're in 2023 now, there are no more films, so we're done with that. And this time, the film that won is All Quiet on the Western Front.
Hey, that's my job.
What, to read the... I'm sorry.
Wow.
Next time, Kyle. Next time.
There won't be a next time.
Well, you know what? There will be next year.
Okay.
I don't know how we're going to do that exactly.
We'll work it out.
But, yeah, so...
It's Im Westen nicht new. In the West, nothing new. That's the German title.
It was a German film.
It was. It was written and told from the German perspective, which is chiefly of these three mates. They're friends, right? And they enlist. But... It is really about the Kaiser Wilhelm II's abdication and the ceasefire, the Allied terms, very nastily demanded by the French.
Now, just to point out,
Ferdinand Foch.
Yes, there's a previous version of this film. We'll get to that in a second. Also, a German perspective, but not the same stories. In fact, they told stories that were not in the book. And the abdication, I believe, was one of them. And just there was this meeting with Germans and French trying to end the war. So much of this took place in November. In fact, I think all the scenes took place in November of one year or another, which is amazing because it's November right now. Couldn't have planned this better because, you know, that very date we just talked about, November 11th, 1918, is the focal point of this film.
Right.
So here we are watching it. We might have even seen it on November 11th, which is really incredible. It makes me wonder if there's a master plan somewhere.
I was going to start this out just pointing out the synchronicity, just how amazing the dates and the times, the holidays line up, but also the stories and how they're eerily similar to a lot of what we're going through worldwide today.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite instructive, amazing that this is the subject matter. And as you were pointing out, it's about this meeting aboard the train, but also this commander who the friends eventually end up on the front serving with, who wave after wave of troops were being basically cycled through. And in fact, the film shows that with just in the uniform in the very beginning, you trace it coming from the front and then being recycled back through this group of guys that are then sent back out to the front. And that commander is General Friedrichs, who was intensely, just burned with this this need to be as triumphant as his father, his living in his father, who was a legendary commander who had all this battle success, living in his shadow, and even 15 minutes before this thing is signed, orders another wave just in as spite to go in,
literally,
and fight against the French.
10:45 a.m. He orders his troops to attack the French when the ceasefire is about to take place, and it's a massacre. It's a massacre of the German troops. You feel sorry for them, you absolutely do. And you know, the film, the book, it's all about the horrors of war. And I mentioned, you know, we saw this before because this film actually won, this book actually won before another film version of it in 1930. Can I just play you an excerpt of the show where we mentioned that particular film? This was 5 years ago that we saw this.
Sure.
The 1930 best film.
Ah.
Let's listen.
Sure.
So we're basically advancing. We're going to catch up to 1929 at some point.
Where the Oscars are for us.
Where the Oscars started. We've been continuing with that, too. We saw...
Cimarron.
Cimarron was the most recent one, but we saw Wings, 1929, the silent epic, the only silent film that won Best Film for Academy Award. And then after that was... it was a terrible film. The Song of Hollywood or something, or the Song of Broadway or something. It was really terrible, and I think the worst film ever to win an Academy Award.
The first one with a depiction of people being drunk.
Okay, yeah.
Or no, wait, was that All Quiet on the Western Front?
Well, All Quiet on the Western Front followed that, and that was really good. That was, you know, that was the film to basically convince people that war is a horrible thing. And when you consider that was, 1930, 1931, that era, and it was about World War One.
Yeah.
It didn't work, obviously, because we had World War II shortly after that. A masterpiece, a real masterpiece. And then the one, yeah, you just mentioned, which actually was billed as a Western, but it was more of an epic.
Okay,
that's
enough of that.
So we didn't say very much about the film then. We just called it a masterpiece. I thought we reviewed it more, but we didn't.
Right. It's a long film. There's a lot of fighting but going back to this film, it references it gently, but not, it's not the same story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing that I think we both noticed. Although there are some shots where you're like, wow, that is vaguely reminiscent of the one house that has no roof, that's blown off, and it's like mm-hmm. casting all these shadows and different creating these different effects. There's just vaguely reminiscent things like that, but it is fascinating just in how the Germans tell the story.
Yeah.
The trench system they built, the places they shot really were remarkable. The costumes, the various levels of injury and depicting this just unimaginable life, trench warfare, which sadly, there's a lot more of in the world these days.
Oh yeah, Ukraine is almost precisely like that.
Looking,
more modern equipment, obviously.
Well, in some ways, but looking at the trenches in the film, you're like, wow, that looks like a news story from the last year or two mm-hmm. of Ukraine, or even before that, after 2014.
Yeah, it's disgusting to see how little we've advanced. We've advanced in how we kill each other, but we haven't advanced in how not to. I like the film. I thought it was really well presented. It was shot beautifully. I thought some of the setup, some of the stories were, I don't know, a bit just predictable. Like, okay, this guy is going to get killed here because he didn't act carefully enough. And we know it was going to be bitter irony at this particular point because that's where you're going to put bitter irony. And it kind of pretty much went as predicted. But for the overall message, small price to pay.
Yeah, there were some things certainly that it was, you're just waiting. You're waiting for the gore almost. So I was kind of... shy. There was so much killing in various frames just really gory stuff.
I couldn't keep track of who was killing whom.
You'd see like one of the characters standing sort of in a doorway of a trench or just in some scene, you're like, oh, that something's going to happen. You just knew it was going to be, it could go very badly. And you tended to kind of just be in anticipation constantly of that. But there were other little details that weren't emphasized as much, or just mm-hmm. were more significant than they actually were given time and attention in the film. Like in the very last scene when the new recruit doesn't break his dog tag, and that is, I'm just reading.
Well, that's apparently how you identify German soldiers who have been killed. You break their dog tag in half.
How their bodies are counted.
And this guy didn't do that for some reason.
I'm left wondering, because I noticed that, but I dismissed it. Mm-hmm. And in reading some of the synopsis, and it's pointed out, and it only makes me wonder, what is that? Is that deliberate? Is it just because they're a new recruit and the cycle continues? And that's why in many of the scenes when they're collecting them, they're told, do this or hurry up, go collect these, or you'll I don't know, if you get more rations for more dog tags, more people
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't think there's an incentive, but it makes me wonder, why was someone that had saved him not valuable enough to count for that new recruit?
No, well, actually, that recruit had a pre-existing relationship with that person. He had saved him at one point, so there was definitely some emotional things. I don't know why he didn't break.
Well, there was also the woman's scarf, and I forgot about which relationships and who was.
That was the only woman in the film, actually, who didn't even have any lines. Who just, yeah. I think she was French, and one of the soldiers hooked up with her, and it was, yeah, there's a lot here. You should see it several times, but yeah, that's all the time we have for this. And Kyle, hit the button for the last time.
There's a lot of snow, it was beautiful scenery, and Kyle, all right, fine,
the
fine.
Button, the button.
All right, yeah.
And that's it. That's, oh.
Where'd they come from?
Where did all these people come from? Wow.
Sit
that's
down.
Very.
No, you can sit. Please.
Okay. No, insist. No, they shouldn't, because they're not really, you shouldn't be in the control room. Thank you. Thank you for that. But could you please find out who they are and make sure they don't come back? Thank you. I thought we had a lock on the control room door. Yeah. Okay. So that's the end of films of the year. That was, but you know, what's interesting, when I was going through, that excerpt that we played, from the first, version of All Quiet on the Western Front. There have been three altogether, but two of them have won Best Film, and one didn't, apparently. I found something else on that same show, which was May 22nd, 2018. We were so young then. Guess what we were talking about? We were talking about the Middle East. Yeah, and I'd like to play an excerpt where we're talking about something that happened with Israel and Palestine 5 years ago. Listen.
To agree on every issue, we need to realize that we're different. We're going to disagree on some things. For instance, I annoyed a lot of people last week when I talked about the BDS movement. That's bdsmovement.net, to boycott the Israeli government and all the terrible things that they are doing to human beings. But it doesn't mean I can't stand next to you in the fight to preserve abortion rights, or, you know, to basically protect health care or immigration, things like that. But I will speak out when I see injustice. It's not going to always be in agreement with what you believe. And on that subject, wow, I just cannot believe how our media trips over itself to apologize for Israel every time they do something terrible. And last week, you know, it's already been forgotten that last week they murdered 60 people, you know, who were protesting. And here's the thing. This is really what gets me. It was said by Hamas, who rules Gaza, considered a terrorist group in the United States and other places as well. They said that the majority of the males who were killed were Hamas members. And the media and the Israeli government jumped all over that, saying, here, there's proof. There you go. They're right there. See, they're all terrorists. We kill terrorists. Yay, you know. And first of all, you can't believe anything Hamas says. They're not nice people. You say that all the time. Constantly you say that. Yet when they say something like this, you blindly believe it and push that forward as proof of your agenda. No, they consider any male to be a member of Hamas. That's just how it is. It's not a nice way to live. I think we can all agree on that. In this particular case, the people who were burning tires and standing in their own territory were of no real threat. They were simply expressing their anger. Nobody on the Israeli side was hurt. And what the authorities did was unforgivable. And they need to pay the price for that. And if the price is a boycott, okay, great. But, you know, I think the price would be prosecutions. That's never going to happen. Not with the current regime over there and not with our media over here and politicians who are afraid of annoying the wrong people. That has to change. And it's up to us as individuals to put the pressure on and realize that all the support for Israel from the right wing is nonsense because, you know, they don't care about Israel. They don't care about Jews.
They are supported by actual Nazis
exactly.
here in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
You really, really, really need to sober up,
remember,
Israel.
Jews will not replace us.
Jews will not replace us.
What was that all about? That,
Charlottesville.
That was not the Israeli critics chanting that. That's what the right wing was chanting.
They didn't say Jews except for Israel at the border yeah. in specific circumstances. No.
And the fact that the Israeli government buys into this, the fact that they're naming streets and train lines after Trump, you know, you're the only country in the world doing this. It's not going to look good historically. So let's try and rein it back a little bit, figure out a solution. I was thinking, you know, a great solution to this. Let's bring people from South Africa into the Middle East, have them solve the problem, because they did a pretty good job in South Africa. You know, the activist there that ended apartheid, you got a similar situation in Israel. Have those people come up and whatever they say goes. And both sides have to deal with it. And, you know, no one side is an angel here. That is certainly true. And there are horrible things that we can point to on both sides. But when you massacre people like that, yeah, that's something that really has to be addressed. And when you ignore it, you become part of the problem.
Wow. That was from May 22nd, 2018, more than 5 years ago. How little has changed. Really, really incredible. And how many of you know? I forgot about this. 60 people massacred by Israeli forces for protesting on their own territory, you know, burning tires, that kind of thing. Yeah, you know, all of that adds up. All of that is something that is remembered by people over the years who lived through it. We forget about it. We have the luxury of forgetting. Over there, it's not so easy.
Yeah, the first time I really realized the sort of murderousness was Rachel Corrie, who was a Evergreen State College student who was run over by an American bulldozer. A fortified military bulldozer made by the CAT Corporation that Israel customizes and uses to knock down settlement, knock down houses for the settlements. And an American citizen was there with an NGO and so on, and then was active that day and mm-hmm. got bulldozed and killed by an American bulldozer. And by the idea,
mocked by people for not getting out of the way. You know, that's
right.
That's how they.
Right. And
they,
from
they,
then on, I was in college, and it was already something that people were, you know, and I was aware of the whole issue, but it wasn't taught enough. Mm-hmm. It was not taught enough in any of the schools I went to. I really am proud to hear that colleges are working hard to do better about that. But it was the realization I had that, like. Yeah, and there's never been an investigation of all of that, and it was my first realization of, like, yeah, Israel's a place where you could go and be killed, and the U.S. would defend the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have a... it would be more likely.
Yeah, it's...
And that's sobering as an American.
She was on Palestinian territory, I believe, when she was killed.
She was in the Strip, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, this has been going on for quite some time, one horror after another. And, you know, it's not a one-way street either, obviously. Today, there was a massive rally in Washington, D.C. For the hostages, you know, pro-Israel. And that's great. You know, I think, you know, you should be able to go to a pro-Palestinian rally and the next day go to a pro-Israel rally because, you know, people want the same thing. It's very different, though, when you start preaching death and start minimizing lives or just not even caring about lives. The situation in hospitals in Gaza is, I mean, they're not even hospitals anymore. That is barbaric. There's no other word for it. You can't do that to people. And, you know, I sympathize if it is true that Hamas is underground, literally underground, under a hospital. That does not give you the right to destroy the hospital. And I just, it really bothers me to see these people on the media not being challenged, saying, well, we try not to kill people, but Hamas hides itself within the people, so we have no choice. Yeah, you do have a choice. You can be a human being and not murder people who did nothing to you. And you know, the count is over 11,000 now, more than half of which are children. How do you defend that? You can't defend that. You know, what happened on October 7th was absolutely horrible, and the whole world, or at least most of the world, I would think, would be behind the victims of that. But it's been eclipsed, and that is a real tragedy.
Totally. The hospital situation and the just irreverence in a lot of the actions being taken, it's not something I want to co-sign on. Not really.
No.
And the situation itself is... something to watch, and hopefully it changes soon.
Now, here at Stony Brook, we've had 3 pro-Palestinian rallies and a peace vigil. There was a pro-Palestinian rally at Stony Brook last Thursday, drew about 150 students who marched without incident for about 45 minutes around the campus, chanting and toting signs. There was a lone counter-protester who carried a sign and stood silently near the protesters outside the Student Activity Center, saying, I think they're misinformed. Hamas is doing the injustice. But, you know, I think the way it played out here is a model for the way it should play out in other places. Some universities got it so wrong, and people there were saying stupid things and being divisive. Here it's more, you know, express yourself, listen to another side, and hopefully work together.
Yeah, here's an example of the short-sightedness. I think Netanyahu was talking about basically scolding the U.S., saying, well, there were however many civilians killed in the actions the U.S. took in Iraq and so on. So the U.S. should know that this is a part of, you know, whatever kind of defending yourself you want to call after someone invades or attacks you, like making the September 11th parallel. The thing is, he thinks that it was like a vacuum here. There was no one that questioned the shock and awe and the insane response from George W. Bush.
Of course.
And of course, all the surveillance coziness that no doubt Israel has some insight into that took place after with the Patriot Act. I'm really curious how silly he might feel realizing that the same people that are upset and pointing out this is not the right course for Israel were the same people that were protesting the war against Iraq after 9/11. And I mean, even in Ukraine and some of those actions, it was not a free for all, and it was about getting rid of soldiers, mm-hmm. not civilians. And I mean, if you want to take a maximalist approach to all this killing, there's plenty of people that love that, a whole arms industry for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can do that. I'm fine with it. It's like foie gras, but eventually people are going to break.
You know, one other sort of disturbing part of all this on campus, one person said people are avoiding it. Professors are only mentioning in passing. Some people don't want to start anything. I get it, but you need to address the situation. You need to know about the situation and just be open to learning. Avoiding it, that's not the right way to deal with this. Definitely take an interest and listen to people and don't condemn and don't judge. This is something, universities are places to learn about this and to reach conclusions. Hey, we're almost out of time, but there's a song I want to go out with, which... because of who it is going to be controversial. Because of what it is, I hope it's unifying. It's from the final real Pink Floyd album called Final Cut. I wonder if that's why they called it that. This is a song called The Gunner's Dream. It's about
a battle in World War II where this guy is literally falling to his death after being shot down out of the sky over Germany. And basically the thoughts that are going through his head, his hopes for the future of a world of peace and a place where doors aren't kicked in anymore. And Roger Waters does an incredible job with this song. I think it's one of his best works. And I'm sorry if you don't like Roger Waters or if you think he's anti-Semitic. That's a whole other discussion we can have another time. But in this particular case, this is something that I think, especially around Remembrance Day, something we should all listen to, we should all learn from, and we should all believe something that we need to try and prevent, even though it keeps happening time and time and time again. It's not played very much. You don't hear it very often. It's not one of the hits, but it's definitely one of the masterpieces. There's a section of this song, see if you can hear it, where Roger Waters' voice basically just morphs into a saxophone. It's really incredible. So write to us, otw@2600.com. Kyle, it's been a pleasure, and we'll do it again next week.
Oh, it's my privilege.
And stay tuned to WUSB for all kinds of great programming, day and night. Have a good night. Pay attention. Good night.
Bye.
Floating down through the clouds, memories come rushing up to meet me now. But in the space between the heavens and the corner of some far field, I had a dream. Goodbye, Max. Goodbye, Ma. After the service, when you're walking slowly to the car, and the silver in her hair shines in the cold November air, you hear the tolling bell and touch the silk in your lapel. And as the teardrops rise to meet the comfort of the band, take her frail hand and hold on to the dream. What's more, no one ever disappears. You never hear the standard issue kicking in your door. You can relax on both sides of the tracks, and maniacs don't blow holes in bandsmen by remote control. prayers to the Lord. And no one kills the children anymore. No one kills the children anymore. Just write off his final scene. Take heed of the dream. Take heed.